Welcome to the Unchained series on powerful women. This series celebrates women who lead with courage, vision, and deep purpose. Today I'm speaking with Catherine Weinberg, CEO of Fetola, business strategist, change maker, and serial entrepreneur, whose work is transforming lives across Southern Africa. I met Catherine in 2018 when we were part of the same paragliding gypsy tour, and I've been wanting to talk to her on my podcast ever since. Catherine has built 5 businesses in 3 countries, and for nearly 2 decades, she's been at the helm of Fetola, an organization dedicated to building businesses that last. Fetola supports youth and women entrepreneurs who want to start their businesses. In this conversation, we explore what it takes to lead with integrity and why Catherine believes that business, done right, can be a powerful engine for social justice and lasting change. Welcome to the studio, Catherine.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So I'd like to start at the beginning and ask you, what was your very first dream job as a child?
Oh, I wanted to be an explorer. I always saw myself like riding a horse across the desert or going into the unknown. So very much was not about it being a job. It was just about finding exciting new places to go to and new things to do.
Yeah. And how did that pan out for you?
I think I am an explorer, actually. I was just thinking the other day, what is it about my life that I really enjoy? And it is exactly that. I explore, maybe not in the same sense that I saw as a kid, but everything I do is about exploring new ideas, new ways to make a difference, and new opportunities. So in my own way, I am exactly that.
Yeah. And what is it about the way you grew up and what you studied and where you worked at first that actually led you to eventually starting your own business?
So my kind of life journey was a little bit vague and certainly unstructured. I'm not one of those people that sat as a young child and planned it all out, the complete opposite. So I'm the daughter of an entrepreneur, and I think without realizing it, our upbringing changes our perspective. I'm born and raised in Zambia, so I did my primary school there and then was shipped off very unhappily to boarding school in England. I went from school to university in Edinburgh. I chose to study initially biochemistry because my grandfather was a professor of biochemistry. And then when I got there, I realized all the good parties were in the agriculture faculty. So I changed to agriculture. And then I went from there to Australia. And people said, well, why did you go to Australia? And I went to Australia because as a kid, I did a nature project. And there was the laughing kookaburra, this picture that I cut out of a magazine. And so for the next, whatever it was, almost 20 years, I just had this dream of seeing the laughing kookaburra. And so I went to do my master's in Australia. And then, in fact, came back to Zambia and settled there for a bit and started some business there. And from there, it's a long journey to where I got to.
What was the first business you started?
So the first business, I actually started together with my to-be husband. Before we were married, we carved out a small little tomato farm. I think it was like 2 acres out of the bush, outside of Lusaka, and planted tomatoes there. And out of that one season of tomatoes, managed to get enough cash to buy a bucky, which was like this huge success. So that was the first. And in fact, the next one was the our import business, and the genesis of that is a story on its own.
Do you want to tell that story?
I can tell that story. So my very first, not quite my first job, but one of my first jobs, I was agricultural economist for the Zambian Farmers Union. And at the bright age of 27, you know, when you think you know it all, right? At 27, I was tasked with the job of setting the maize price or motivating for the maize price. And in my wisdom, I decided the maize price should be doubled. I'd done all the numbers, crunched all the numbers, and clearly it should be doubled. And so I have had to go through a journey, first of all, to the Minister of Agriculture, who was a general, a male general, and he was very unhappy with this pipsqueak young woman waltzing into his office saying, no, we need to double the maize price. And so he said, okay, fine, we'll, you know, we'll do that. And I had to motivate, then go and speak to the president. So I had to go to presidential state house and persuade the president that we should double the maize price. And I had this great, I was a great orator and very persuasive. And I explained to him, no, if we double the maize price, every corner of Zambia would be planted to maize. And Zambia would become the first exporting, net exporting nation in Africa, black nation in Africa. And that was very appealing to him. So he said, yes, great idea. But I had to then go to Parliament and motivate there in Parliament. So I then went and I said the same thing, you know, you need to do this. We're going to be the most amazing country in the on the continent. We're going to be the first net exporter. And everybody said it was a great idea. Except for the one dissenting voice, which was the Minister of Finance, who said, well, we can't actually afford it. But everybody said, no, it doesn't matter that we can't afford it. It's not relevant. And it was passed. And so at the age of 27, I basically changed the entire direction of the country. And they did, in fact, double the maize price. And that, in fact, was the first step towards opening of the economy in Zambia. So at the young age of 27, I had this rather scary experience, actually, of changing a nation. It was a little bit overwhelming, actually,
yeah,
to be honest.
And how did this lead to your import-export business?
So how that led to it is that not long after that, because in doubling the maize price, I had inadvertently completely unsettled the entire economic structure in the country. And the country went into hyperinflation, and the World Bank stepped in and said, hang on, we're going to cut off the money supply. And so what they did is they changed the way that you accessed dollars, because up until that time, you would only get dollars. You had to apply through this special committee that allocated money to kind of friends of friends. And so they started an auction system. And by the second week of the auction system, my husband and I were in business, because we said, okay, this is an opportunity. We'll bid on this foreign exchange in order to access foreign exchange, in order to bring in goods for the farming community that we were embedded in. And so that then began the starting point of this import company. We knew nothing about finance. We knew nothing about importing. We knew nothing about auctions. And we really just learned on the job. So it's kind of the classic example of seeing an opportunity and just jumping in. Because if we'd waited in order to be perfect, we probably would never have done it. In fact, if we'd waited and looked at all the reasons not to do it, we probably never would have done it. And in that waiting, other people would have jumped in. And so that was the start of a very successful import business.
Yeah, it almost sounds like that entrepreneurial spirit. You know, you see an opportunity and then you jump in, even though you don't know all the answers yet.
Yeah, it's exactly that. I think that and that's maybe, people often ask me, you know, are entrepreneurs born or made? And I really believe they're born. Because there's this inherent ability to spot an opportunity, number one, but also having the courage to leap. And that's a classic case of we just leapt off a cliff. We had no clue. And learned on the journey. So
that's an immense amount of courage and bravery to do that. So how did all of that eventually lead to you establishing Fetola?
Yeah, so there's a longer story in that. And that is over the next 10 years or more, my husband at the time, we moved to South Africa. So we started an export business from here, and then we had farms, and I had an apartment hotel, and we had all of this kind of suite of businesses. And then through a series of circumstances outside of my control, we actually lost everything. And so in 1998, we lost everything. I went in the period of a year, actually, in the year that I turned 40, I celebrated my 40th birthday with great gratitude, beautiful husband, beautiful children, wonderful life. And 9 months later, I had the clothes on my back and the three children. And so I had to start again. And part of that journey through pain is great opportunity for growth. And of course, I'll gloss over the painful period, but within, I think it was about 4 years later, I really had this awakening that I was put on earth to do more. And the gift of losing everything was that I suddenly realized that I had all of these talents that I've been sitting on, I'd been a support. I'd been the half of a team of two, and I was forced to now be a team of one. And in that, recognizing first of all that I had this desire to do stuff, I wanted to make a difference, and to my surprise, I had the ability to do it, and that then I had the courage to the courage. I don't know. Yeah, I mean ignorance, whatever. I had the courage to start.
I guess you. I think there's a fine line between bravery and ignorance. You just don't know. You know, so, you have to take the leap.
You know, it's something so interesting in that. So my ex-husband was a real entrepreneur. He was much more entrepreneurial than me, to the extent that I would say, you know, very entrepreneurial people are actually gamblers. You know, and they'll either end up in jail or they're broke, right? And so he was a very good entrepreneur. And I'm not. I'm not actually a natural entrepreneur. And there was a big, it was difficult for me to move from being the support team, from you know, being kind of the balance, almost the handbrake when things were going a little bit wild, to being, putting myself out in the front and being the ultimate decision maker. And that was, didn't actually come naturally to me. But I think probably it's made me a better entrepreneur because I'm more of a business leader than, you know, the kind of wild gambler.
Yeah. So what was the spark that led to the formation of Fitzola?
Well, there was a period. I mean, I was working for somebody else. I mean, I was the single parent, single sole breadwinner for three children. So I was working for somebody else. And I kind of got frustrated that my full potential wasn't being realized. You know, I realized that by working for somebody else, you never get to express your full self. And at the time, there was a lot of talk about women's empowerment. This is in 2006. So everything was about women's empowerment. It was like the big conversation at the time. And I thought to myself, you know, you haven't empowered anybody unless you've helped them, you put them in control of the money that they make, the money in their pocket. And initially it was like, okay, I'll help people to be better, you know, women to be better financially savvy. And then I thought, but that's not enough. If I teach them to be an entrepreneur, I teach them not only to be able to make and master the money for themselves today, but that it creates generational change. Because if a mother's been an entrepreneur, their children will know about that, and the chances are they will then become entrepreneurs. And kind of my dream was to say, you know, today it might be the woman selling tomatoes on the corner. Tomorrow her son might have the little spaza store. And in the next generation, his daughter might earn the next Pick and Pay. And I actually had that experience once where somebody literally came in and it was one of our entrepreneurs and his mother had been selling tomatoes on the corner. And it was just so thrilling.
It's like my story came true.
My story came true. Yeah. Yeah. And I think more and more. And I mean, just talking about the work that we do in Fitzola, what's so incredible is to see the generational impact. So, you know, like 9 out of 10 of our businesses are still in business 10 years later, which is like phenomenal. And so what happens is that I think in that time is that it creates a slipstream of success for other people. And that's how you change a country.
Yeah. So when you initially started Fitzola in 2006, what were your biggest fears and unknowns, and how did you push forward despite all of that?
So I was, you know, they talk about, is it luck or is it skill? I mean, there's always a little bit of luck, right? So where I was working, one of the clients of the company I was working for was Old Mutual. And I had, in my role, had privy to conversations where they were frustrated with the impact of the work they were doing. It was actually the Old Mutual Foundation. And they were frustrated that they were doing all of this work and they were, you know, doing amazing work all over South Africa, and they never kind of got recognized for it. And I realized, I actually pitched to them, I said, you know, I've got a strategy for you. And I believe that what we can do is that if we consolidate the work that we do, your work can be seen and it will naturally improve from there. And so I was able to walk from a fully paid job straight into a first contract with a client. I mean, like Old Mutual. And so It wasn't, I don't know that I was fearful. Maybe I'm just stupid. I don't know. I don't remember being fearful. I think my biggest thing was, how do I invoice them? I don't have a company, you know. And then I actually phoned up my sister-in-law. I said, hey, can I use your company? And she said, no, well, why don't you take over this Fatola? And so Fatola was actually perfect. Okay. So its full name, Fatola, is Fatola Moho, which in Sesotho means changing together. And so for what we do, it was, in fact, the perfect, it was a perfect company.
Yeah. So what was it doing initially? And then you changed it in something else.
Yeah. So we'd sat, so my sister-in-law, Cynthia, and I think two other women and myself had, we tendered for something and we'd sat together as a bunch of women. And one of the women, Jean Madzongwe, actually, was Sesotho speaking, and she said, oh, come on, let's put this thing, you know, change in together. It was just literally for a tender, and then we didn't get the tender, and so the company was sitting there just waiting for me.
Just waiting for you to take it and turn it into something awesome.
Yeah, but yeah. I have to tell you, so we've always said to people, okay, the beautiful thing about Fatola is that it means change. And just the other day, somebody said to me, no, it means answer as well. And so now I can say, if you have something to change, we have the answer.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. So how have you grown as a person as a result of, I know, starting this company and helping others to build lasting businesses?
You know, I always say when I work with entrepreneurs, the very first time we meet with them, I get a look in there. And I'll always say to them, you can't be a leader if you don't understand yourself. And so this entire journey has been really one of self-discovery. Mm. The more you understand yourself, and people press your buttons and you have challenges and you have staff that, you know, that you don't know how to manage. And it's never really about them. It's always about you. And so for me, I have a real passion for helping people to reach their full potential. And so I do that in the company. So I think one of my talents is finding people that want to grow, because I want to grow. I can only grow if they're going to grow, and they can only grow if I grow, because I have to keep making space underneath me. And I think a lot of that is really this thing of, you know, learning. I always say I'm like an experiment of one, because if I'm feeling this, you know, like if I'm feeling tired, or if I'm feeling that the timesheet system is really not working for me, if, you know, I'm feeling burdened, the chances are that it's reflected in the people around me. And so I often use myself as a barometer for knowing what has to be done in order to inspire a team. And it's the same thing inside or outside the business, whether you're working with individuals in your team, or in my case, working with individuals in their own team. It's a lot of the stories are the same. A lot of the way to lead is the same.
Yeah, it sounds like you are very clear about what your purpose are and what your values are and what you will and won't do.
Very.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's very, very true. So we're very much a mission-driven business. Mm-hmm. So we have a 100-year vision, and our 100-year vision is changing lives for the better forever. And so the thing with a 100-year vision like that is, we don't know. I mean, today we're helping entrepreneurs. Tomorrow, who knows? Maybe some AI stuff. We have no clue. And this to 100 years, we have absolutely no clue. But because we're so purpose-driven, it means that we get people in our team that are fully aligned. We have an incredibly well-aligned team. I think we have like a 95% alignment. People come because they want to make a difference. Mm. And that purpose makes it very easy to stay on track. We're very clear about the type of clients we want. We quite often walk away from work that we don't believe there's an ethical alignment, or we don't believe that we're really chasing the same thing. We won't take it on. And I think that makes life much more fulfilling. I think that's the reason you start your own business, is so that you can do your own stuff, you know.
I was going to ask you a question about, have you ever walked away from something, but you've answered that one already.
Yeah. So, yeah, the interesting thing with walking away is that, you know, what happens is life always goes through its highs and lows. You have periods when you're really, really confident, and periods when you're quite fearful. And the thing is that when you're fearful, it's much more difficult to stick by your rules. Because when you're fearful, it's very, maybe you fear about money. Most people have fear about money, right? So you're fearful, oh my God, you know, we're not making ends meet, or it looks as though we're getting into a lean period. It's much more difficult then to say, no, I'm actually not going to take this work. Mm-hmm. And so that's why being really sure about what your values are, knowing that your vision is clear, just allows you to stick to your kind of rules.
Yeah.
Your own rules.
And it can be very difficult, you know, because you just have to trust that what you're doing is going to lead to something that is going to, you know, create change in your case.
You know, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something else. And I don't know if it's the same in corporate, because I've never worked in corporate. I'll be perfectly honest. I don't think I would last a week.
I can give you the corporate perspective. It's not pretty.
No.
But I'd rather hear your story.
Yeah, yeah. Now I've forgotten what I was going to say.
So, yeah, the question is, how have you stayed true to your identity, which includes your values, purpose, and authenticity, while navigating the demands and compromises that come with scaling an organization?
So one of my rules for myself is authenticity. And people often ask me, you know, how come you can speak in front of 1,000 people? Don't you get scared? And it's like, no, because I'm just going out there to be myself. I make a point. I never come into a room as an expert, because if you come in touting yourself as the expert, you immediately set yourself up for criticism. And so for me, staying true to my values, true to my purpose, has really been about authenticity.
Mm.
But it's always about, it does get difficult. You know, I've been doing this now for nearly 20 years. Next year's 20 years that we've been doing, I've been running for Tola. And there are definitely times when times are tough. And I think as the leader, the ultimate leader of a business, what's really hard is that your energy is everything. So, I mean, my team, and I have a team of like 35 people, I think it is now in Cape Town, and together with our part-time people, it's more than 100 people all around the country. And I'm very mindful that how I am and how I turn up and what my energy is really determines what happens in the business. And that can be exhausting.
Mm.
It can be really hard. It can be hard. It's, you know that you need to turn up. You know that whether you feel positive or whether you're excited or enthusiastic emanates through everybody. And sometimes it's hard to do.
Yeah. So how do you take care of yourself so that you can regenerate your energy?
So I have to say, I always thought burnout was for sissies. I never thought I would hit that. I never thought it was for me. And in fact, just recently I took some time out. I went to Greece on a retreat because I recognized that I'd got to that point. I don't know. I'm not great at doing that. I think I'm very resilient. I'm very driven. I'm very mindful. My mission, my purpose has always been my North Star. And maybe it's now because I'm getting to a point in my career where I want to move on. But not because I have to. It's just because if you're going to create a 100-year business at some stage, you got to find another bunch of people to take it over. But that's definitely a step change in my life. And I think that as that personal alignment to the vision has now become a question mark, I think that's when something like burnout breaks through. And maybe it's because it's an allowing. Maybe you, I don't know. Kind of mumbling here, but I think burnout, I don't know if burnout just hits you, and maybe it hits some people earlier than others, but yeah, I never thought it would hit me, so.
Mm. But you did something to.
I did something to. I took some time out. In fact, I'll tell you the story. So I decided, somebody said to me, hey, this friend of mine have got this retreat in Greece. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a good idea. I didn't read anything about it. I knew nothing about it, but I said it felt like a good idea. And then when I got there, I suddenly realized, oh my word, you know, people are going to expect me to go back all healed and fixed. And I've like been here for like 10 days. And I said to myself, that's crazy. You can't fix in 10 days. I need 10 months. And so then what I said to myself, I'm going to give myself the 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to expect to be healed and perfect in 10 days because that was just putting more pressure on me. And so I said, okay, I'm going to give myself 10 months. So I've kind of given myself 10 months of love to make a transition from where I was to where I'm going. The next cliff that I'm going to jump off.
Yeah.
And fly, I have to say. No, I'm going to jump off and fly, right?
Yeah, we know how to fly.
No, we know how to fly.
Yeah, we know how to fly. Yeah. So looking back, what would you tell your younger self about ambition and success?
I wish I would have told myself, I wish somebody had told me, first of all, that it's okay to be bossy. You know, when I was quite young, I remember coming home and being really upset because some kid had said to me, oh, you're bossy. And my family had laughed at me. They said, oh, you are bossy. And I found that was really wounding. They wouldn't say that to a boy. Mm. A boy child, they would say, no, you've got leadership capabilities. And so I would say to myself that who you are and the talents that you bring are really valuable. Don't let people discount you for that. Because maybe the sadness is that I was 40, I started Fotolo like whatever, 45, that it took me that long to believe in my talents and my ambition. So yeah, although life is always also perfect. You know, the journey and the struggles are part of the journey, you know. If you didn't have the struggles, you wouldn't have learned, so.
Yeah, so from which struggles did you learn the most?
I would say absolutely the game changer was losing everything. Mm. Because you suddenly go, I mean, I lost everything, right? Of course, I lost all my material possessions, but I lost my marriage. I lost my status in life. I was no longer a married woman. I was not single. I was a divorcee. And so really stripped off. And maybe one of the most poignant memories around that time for me is up until then, I'd always be the one that helped other people. We as a family would be the one that you can borrow the car. We'll help you with the school fees. Don't worry. You know, we can help you out, to now being the one that had to accept those kindnesses. And initially that was really hard for me. And then I realized in that is that when there's a giver, there has to be a receiver. And yeah, so I kind of got comfortable with that. I think that was a big thing. That's a big thing to needing help, to be the helper, to needing help. And maybe that's something I could do better with, have along my life maybe done better with, is to accept help more.
Yeah. But it turned you into a great helper. Now you help others to start businesses and you're lifting so many women into economic freedom, you know. Yeah. So it's like that might have just been the spark that turned you into the compassionate helper that you are.
Completely. Without that sort of system, my grace, I often say that was my greatest gift. Yeah. Because that woke me to my purpose and it woke me to my strengths. And without that cataclysmic change in my life, that I wouldn't have this. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So what does success look like to you these days?
For me, success has always been about impact. And so that's about helping. So I measure success not about my income. I'm blessed with having sufficient income for my needs. I have various modest needs. But for me, success is about saying, literally, how many people's lives have I changed? I think that's the greatest gift that one can possibly have. Now, after 20 years in the business, I do look back and say, in fact, now that I'm in a different transition point in my life, that's not enough for me. And I think if I also listen to my kids say to me, oh, Mom, we don't want to be like you, where you dedicated everything to your work. We want more. We want a balanced life. And so now if I look at my definition of success, I think it's important to make an impact. I would like to go on making an impact, a little bit inspired by Jane Goodall. Gosh, if she can be changing the world at 91, who am I to think that I should, you know, park off right now? But I think in this, what I would like to get right is a better balance between my personal life and my work. I've really dedicated all of my energy to my work. And right now I'd like to balance that a bit more. I think it's important. Belonging, intimate relations, friendships are as important as impact.
So let's look a little bit towards the future. So given all of the changes we're going through at the moment, I mean, the world is going through so many changes in terms of technological stuff. You mentioned AI, climate, social changes. I mean, the world sometimes feels like it's going crazy.
Yeah.
What capabilities do you believe that leaders, and especially women, will need most in the next decade?
I think not just, everybody. I think in leadership, you're going to need to be able to think. You're going to need to be able to step back, see the bigger picture, and have the courage to really jump in and do something about it. Because in a world of AI, you know already, you can find anything out in 30 seconds. Just go to chat. I mean, never mind all the other tools as well, but just go to ChatGPT. You can get all the answers instantly. And so the ability to think, to ask the right questions, but also to be able to step back and kind of synthesize what's happening. And I suppose the courage to keep moving. But I do want to preface that there's always a counterculture. So right now, the feeling is everything moves so fast. Because of AI, you need the answer yesterday. There's an expectation. I'm here today and, I'm on the moon tomorrow. The reality is human nature doesn't move that fast. And so the counterculture is going to be the slower, more human-connected, more interpersonal parts of our lives. And I just think we shouldn't get too hysterical and anxious about the impact of AI, because we are all, after all, a human species, and belonging and meaning and interconnectedness is and I think always will be important to us.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're social animals.
We're social animals. In Fatola, we still only work 2 days a week at the office. And I think it's a mistake. I really think that you lose something. There's something about the remote working. Yes, it's convenient. Yes, you don't have to waste time traveling. You don't have the cost of traveling. But I think that we really lose something. We lose something by being so disconnected like that. And I think we're still trying to find the way, and we probably will be for the rest of time, is how do you balance the best of the old and the new? But I really believe, for me anyway, maybe it's just who I am, but I believe that interconnectedness and how we relate as people, it's actually what feeds us. Mm. All of the rest of the stuff, it's like I said to you, it's like we're all just really searching for love. It doesn't matter whether you're trying to be a perfectionist at work or whether you're trying to win a gold medal at the Olympics. Ultimately, if you scratch beneath that surface, it's just a way to be seen, recognized, and loved.
Mm. And we're always going to be looking for that. So anything in your business or in your connections or in your work that feeds that is going to endure.
Yeah. And so I think that's also where, and again, maybe it's the thing about balance. I've always been, I was a bit skeptical about balance. I say to people, don't look too much for balance, because balance doesn't actually take you anywhere. Balance means that you're static, right? I think it's important. You have to have movement. So if you're goal orientated, you want to succeed in your career or anywhere in life, you have to be out of balance, because that's how you move forward. But I think it's important in one's whole life to be balanced. So there might be a crazy period where you're building a career or building a business. And then there might be a softer, quieter period, maybe when you have kids or when, it's some other, or you take a retreat.
Mm. It's like an ebb and flow.
And to
sort of align everything with your energies.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to ask you something else as well. So earlier you said that you started Fatola in your 40s, which to many people sounds like it's late.
So old,
it's late. Okay. So many people are in that state of like, I've missed my moment.
Yeah.
Or it's too late for me to do anything to make any sort of change. So what would you say to women? And you can specifically speak to me, because I'm in this position right now, who in mid or late career are considering a bold pivot towards something new, because that's exactly, and actually you can just give me the advice, because I'm, okay. I'm in a situation right now.
So I'll just be absolutely frank. It's never too late.
Okay.
It's never, ever, ever too late. I think life comes in its stages. And so for you, this is exactly your stage, because what you've been doing up until now is gathering the experience and wisdom, and then taking a breather and then moving into your second life. And I think that, I've observed in myself is that we have many lives in one life. And yeah, so just do it.
Okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to just take the leap.
Just do it. And I want to go back to say something else. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. What I've observed is that what happens is then when we have nothing, we're often much bolder. When we have nothing to lose, we're bolder. Okay. And so people are quite courageous about starting, often about starting a business or starting a career. But then when they get in it, they think, I've invested so much, I don't want to jeopardize. And then they become more risk averse. And so in your case, you've concluded something. You chose to conclude something. So you have nothing to lose. And so that's why it's the perfect time for you to go on.
Okay. You've convinced me completely. So what type of legacy do you hope to leave behind?
So the legacy, so I would love to have a business that lasts 100 years. I think that would be an ultimate legacy. But more than that, my legacy is that I've helped thousands of people to change the way they think about themselves, to believe in themselves, and to build businesses, that go on and change lives for other people. So that's, I've already left quite a nice legacy there. I'm at a next level in my thinking is that I want to change the country. And I think in order to do that, our country's in a really dire state. We cannot just carry on doing what we've been doing. We can't think, whether it's Fatola or whether it's anybody else, thinking what we've done is enough. We actually need to stop, like you were saying, leaders of the future. We need to stop, take stock and say, it's not working like this. What is it that we can do differently? And in fact, the work that I'm working on right now is doing exactly that. I've done some really interesting research into what other developing countries around the world are getting right and distilled the 6 key points out of that, that I think that we can learn both as leaders in the country, but also as game changers like people in Fatola, that we can get right, because we can't continue the way that we are just with our eyes closed and hoping for the best.
Do you want to talk more about your research?
Sure. So I was asked to do some research for the Startup 20, part of the G20 component, and I was asked to do a strategy with Andy Network. So the Aspen Network of Development Entrepreneurs. And they said, okay, can you facilitate a conversation about how do you create successful startups? And my starting point was to say, well, I don't have the answers to that. Let me go out and look at what other countries are doing around the world. And I chose 6 leading developing nations in the world and then 6 in Africa. And the cross-cutting information there was, if I just say there were 6 things, I hope I can remember them. The first one certainly is, if we look at China, they are the gold standard. They're managing to grow a thriving economy. What I didn't know was that 80% of their economy is actually local economy. Only 20% roughly is export orientated. And so they have a very strong local economy. And we haven't done that. We haven't actually, we have many people, but our local economy is very, very weak. We have a tiny, like 80% of our economy goes through a tiny sliver of businesses up in the top end. And so one of the things all of these countries have done better than us, have done well, is that they've really fostered a strong local economy. The second thing, again, if you look at China, is that as an exporting nation, most of their exporting products are built through a whole value chain of small businesses. And so there, if you're going to have a product that's world class, every single entrepreneur along the line needs to be world class. And I don't think that we've done that. We've just said, oh, let's give you a catering an opportunity, or let's give you a logistics opportunity. We've not thought world class. So we're not thinking as a nation, how can we be the best? And so I think that's the second thing that we can do better with. The third is collaboration. So in South Africa, we're not great at collaborating, especially entrepreneurs. They like to have their own idea. I'm not going to tell you about it. I want to do it all on my own. And if you look at even countries like Rwanda, they're doing much better than us. And part of it is because they've been really good at building collaboration. Some of the others obvious. Education. We know our education's is not great. Other countries are getting that much better, and we need to change that really, really fast. It's not enough just to say you've got matric if actually that matric is not of no value to somebody. The fourth one then is about access to finance. We know this. We know that we need to improve access to finance, and we know that we need to teach people to understand more of their personal anxieties around money and to manage that better. And the sixth one, I can't remember.
Well, we'll get people to go to your webpage.
Yes, that'll be great.
Find out the six missing ingredients.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would like to talk about that we haven't spoken about yet?
I work every day with amazing women. I just came today from a group of 50 women entrepreneurs from all over South Africa. We have incredible talent in South Africa. We are really the best country in the world. I think that soon people from the rest of the world are going to just wish that they lived here. You know, we have a fantastic constitution. We have a role. We have people that most people that I meet start a business because they want to make a difference. They actually want to do something good for the world. And I think that we need to talk ourselves up better. We need to be better about telling positive stories and building each other up. Because when we start to really believe in ourselves as individuals and as a country, I think we will really unlock the potential of this amazing country, South Africa.
Oh, thank you so much. What a wonderful message to end off with. Thank you for joining me in the studio.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks.
I'm so glad I finally got Catherine into the studio. I've loved bringing her story to you, and I hope you are inspired to start your own business or help anyone who wants to become an entrepreneur. And if you're a woman redefining success on your own terms, know this. Your story matters, your voice has power, and the way you lead can open doors for others.